Well.
Better than on the cold ground, you know. And of course, there was times that you'd sleep on the ground. Mm-hmm. But
would you have tents?
We finally got tents after things kind of got straightened out. Mm-hmm. We had tents, and one time they called it a schoolhouse, but it was a dirt floor, and we could sleep in there. But then we finally got squat tents, mm-hmm. and that helped considerably. And we'd take fuel barrels and pick them, so we get some diesel fuel, drain into them, and make us a stove.
Okay.
And which was better than nothing, you know. Of course, there were a lot of times that we had nothing, like you'd sleep in the cab of a truck or whatever you could get for a little protection.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they have a rainy season over there. And I remember one time, I don't exactly where we were at, but anyway, they took bulldozers and leveled off a big area, set tents up. They didn't no more than get the tents up, and it started pouring down rain. And got inside there, and first thing you knew, water was running up, you know, coming out of a hole there. And a little bit, well, here come a big old rat. So we had to sit there and shoot the rats.
Oh, my.
And it wasn't uncommon sometimes that you'd get your tent in the wrong place, and you'd rain, and anything you had on the ground was floating the next morning. Or
mm-hmm.
But you learned to live with that, mm-hmm. get by best you could.
Well, now, while you were there, what did you have? Regular food, or did you have the?
We had in pretty good food there, whereas in the engineers,
mm-hmm.
Always had good bread. They had a truck with a bakery, and I guess they used kerosene for heating fuel.
Mm-hmm.
But we had the best bread, or at least it seemed like it.
Mm-hmm.
And they was with us at all times with our company, with mm-hmm. the service company, and that bunch was with us. And but normally we had pretty good food.
Okay.
And
so as our troops moved from place to place, you just went after them or before them?
No, right after them.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then you would construct what was necessary to get supplies to
right.
them.
Mm-hmm. And we was up close enough most of the time that we were within artillery range.
Oh,
so
you were.
We had, at night, you know, it was blackout all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And they always had reconnaissance airplanes out, and if you had even a cigarette, you know, I guess those guys could see it, and they could give your position, and the artillery could lay you low.
Mm-hmm.
And so you was very careful about at night, you know, and so there wasn't much nightlife.
Well, and I'm assuming that you didn't have time off.
Oh, no.
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 So how long were you doing that?
I was in Korea 16 months.
16 months. Mm-hmm. And how did you get through that?
Oh, you just learn to live with it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I applied for R&R two or three times and never could get it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just, and there was a few of them got R&R, but.
And when they got R&R, where would they go?
Japan.
Oh, Japan.
Yeah, they would fly you to Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time it was just for 3 days, so.
Mm-hmm.
Really didn't gain much anyway,
mm-hmm.
but it had been a change to go over there. But
yeah. Now, what were you able to write home?
Oh, yeah.
You were still single.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, and your parents were able to send you stuff?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, the mail was pretty good. It's surprising how quickly the mail got back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
It was just pretty good.
And what was the Korean countryside like?
You had anything from desert to the Rocky Mountains,
mm-hmm.
over there. And of course they farm anything that's farmable, they farm it,
mm-hmm.
you know. But I would like to go back now. You see pictures, they've got subways and all this. And like Pusan, it was a tin shanty town when we got over there.
Mm-hmm.
Daegu, it was just blown almost flat ground. It's built up again.
Yeah.
And Seoul is all built back up. And mm-hmm. Now, Seoul, I was only there as I came home, but it had been a most modern city, I think.
Mm-hmm. Was the capital?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It was the capital. Mm-hmm. But rice paddies, and most in the summertime especially, the odor was bad with their fertilizer.
Mm-hmm.
And the people, you had very little contact.
I was going to ask that next.
Yeah, you had the starting of what they've got to put up with over there now. They call them insurgents. We mm-hmm. call them guerrillas.
Mm-hmm.
And really, you couldn't trust the civilian population.
Mm-hmm.
It just, if you did, you generally paid for it, you know, some way or another.
Mm-hmm. Where or how would you come in contact with them as you moved through the countryside?
Oh, yeah. And they were always there. Of course, you had workers. We employed a lot of men.
Oh.
You know, to do handwork mostly,
mm-hmm.
With building roads or bridges or whatever. Employed a lot of men.
Mm-hmm.
But the guerrillas were constantly around, you know, and of course now I have a different attitude than I had then, but the people were so poor, so hungry, no food, no clothing,
mm-hmm.
that they'd do anything to get food or clothing, you know.
Right.
And so it wasn't all their fault,
mm-hmm.
you know, but you had to, now I really feel sorry for even some of the things I did, but
mm-hmm.
at the time you felt, you know, you had to, because they would take advantage of you. They'd get an old woman and a young kid.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, you felt sorry for the old woman and felt sorry for the little kid. Well, you try to help them, the first thing you know, they'd be stealing from you.
Mm-hmm.
And, which made it, but, like I say, I'd have probably done the same thing mm-hmm. if I would have been a little Korean kid, you know.
Yeah,
or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that will lead us to another question. I mean, the conditions of war are such that sometimes things are done that you normally wouldn't do. How did you adjust to that, or how did you cope with that?
Well, I don't know if you ever adjust to it, or what you would, but you just had to learn to live with whatever happened.
Mm-hmm.
You just had to, I guess, harden yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can remember one night, I was a sergeant of the guard, and it was in the middle of the night, and no moon. But anyway, one of the guards came and said, "Got a problem down there. Had a colored outfit hauling ammunition. They got in our compound for the night." So I went down there, and there was one of those drivers, had a little old girl. You thought she's 10 or 12 years old, and she probably was 15 or 20, but anyway, he was trying to have sex with her, and supposedly the little girl's grandmother. Well, I got down there, I could see what was going on, and I tried to kick that guy in the head and missed him and about broke my hip.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, then the old grandma took after me with a tree limb, because
mm-hmm.
she was making money by selling the so-called granddaughter, see.
Oh.
Was the whole operation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, things like that. And of course, I never did get a good look at the little girl. I called her a little girl, because I had a guard take her up and give her to the officer of the day, and I never saw her again.
Mm-hmm.
But things like that is, you know, that's still... I still can't forgive that older woman. It most likely wasn't a grandmother.
Right.
Not even a relative. Just picked up the little orphan kid and mm-hmm. was using her to make money is what mm-hmm. the deal was.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I can't forgive that soldier, even though he's in our uniform and hauling ammunition. And,
mm-hmm.
But I had a bad attitude toward blacks mm-hmm. for quite a long time after that.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose the white guys did it too, but
right.
That was an incident that I was really closely connected with. Mm-hmm. And then you wonder what happened to that girl.
Yeah.
But I imagine most likely she was taken someplace, put in an orphanage, right back out on the street.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Most likely. Because
mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. that was their, one of their ways of survival.
Yeah. So from those, that experience and other experiences, when you look back at it, what did you learn, and was what you learned good or not?
Well, after I was home, Dorothy and I was on a bus trip, and we were in Seattle at one of those flower garden places they had, and there was a group of Orientals there. Mm-hmm. Turned out they were Koreans. And I don't know how I got talked to this one guy. He came up and was talking to me. And I told him, yeah, I'd been in Korea. And I think he was 35 years old or something like that. Well, he wasn't even born yet when I was there. But he started shaking my hand and thanking me. And I said, well, I didn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
He said, well, hadn't been for people like you, I wouldn't be here today.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was just made you feel good. Well,
mm-hmm.
maybe I didn't waste 2 years of my life, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Mm-hmm.
Then, I don't know how long after that, we were on a cruise through the Panama Canal. And I told Dorothy, I said, now we're going to get up 5 o'clock in the morning and go up that observation deck and get us a good seat. Or not necessarily a seat, but a place to see. Well, right next to us was this man and with a Oriental wife, and got visited the whole day with him, and she was Korean,
mm-hmm.
and he was an American soldier, and met her. Of course, that would have been years after I was there, but they had married, and he'd retired from the Army and come over here, and she was telling me more or less like you did, or I told you about the man. It said she was a little girl, about 3 years old. She could remember going back to Seoul. That's where they lived. And she said, all I can remember is walking days and days and days, and that just drifted to no sound. I can still remember her days. Then she said, we finally got there, and their parents' home had a wall around it. And she said, my dad opened the gate and the house was all burned down. And she said, that's the only time I ever saw my father cry.
Mm-hmm.
And that made me feel like they're just as human as I am.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I haven't had a bad dream since. I had a lot of them before then.
Mm-hmm.
But meeting those two people
mm-hmm.
has... And then that, I've got 3 little grandkids adopted from the Philippines.
Okay.
So, mm-hmm. I've got a lot of Oriental connections, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And those people are same as we are.
Yeah.
Same feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Same wants, same needs. Just look a little different.
Mm-hmm. But war doesn't let you think that.
No. Mm-mm. Like right now, if he's an Arab,
mm-hmm.
I have no sympathy for him at all.
Mm-hmm.
But in time, I'm sure there's men over there, and women too now.
Mm-hmm.
It's got the same attitude I had there, you know, kill them all off. That's like I'm saying now,
yeah.
Get rid of them.
Mm-hmm.
But these men and women will come home and 20, 30, 50 years from now, I'm sure they'll have the same feelings toward the average people mm-hmm. over there that I have now toward the Koreans.
Mm-hmm.
And
when you came home after those experiences and you said you had bad dreams, why do you think you had bad dreams, and did you talk about your experience once you got home?
Oh, no, not. I've talked more today than a normal.
Mm-hmm.
Not a whole lot.
Okay. And why do you think
I don't know, but you just don't do it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And the bad dreams would have been the experiences?
Yeah, different things that happened. And and it seemed like the dream was always worse than what really happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I know it used to scare my wife to death on that.
Mm-hmm.
Have a fit in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
But like I say, after mainly those two people, that man and that woman,
yeah,
it's put me at ease.
That's interesting, really.
Yeah, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's
well, and thank goodness.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there are people that they never get over it. They eventually, mm-hmm, you might say, just lose their mind from,
mm-hmm,
experiences like that.
Yeah. When you were over there, did you understand why we were fighting the war? And
yeah, I guess I did, because the communists were just slowly moving,
mm-hmm,
like the Islam situation now. They just keep was trying to eat their way into every place, and
mm-hmm,
and yeah, we all understood why we were there.
Mm-hmm.
And
did you have much contact with the men who were fighting, or the Americans?
Not very much.
Okay, but you certainly knew some of the things.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I know I had one kid. I don't know why I was lucky or unlucky, but I don't think he was over 19 or 20. He was in infantry and got shot here between the shoulder and his neck. Oh, it was a wicked scar. And for some reason, they brought him in to me, and he said, "You keep him for 30 days. And the only words he ever said to me, he called me Sarge. And maybe if he needed something, you know, like maybe a piece of clothing or fixed or something. But other than that, he just would not talk. And one night, the guard comes to the tent, because I kept him right in my tent where we slept, and told me, he said, "This kid, I don't even remember his name, said he's down in the tent where our laundry had family that did the company laundry, threatening to kill him." So I jumped up and went down there, and they had a kerosene lantern in their tent. They had a big old tent there, and he was sitting in there on something with a rifle across his knees. And I started talking to him, and he never moved. And I got down there and took the rifle away from him. He didn't really resist, you know. And checked it. All he had to do was pull the trigger. And I think about him a lot.
Mm-hmm.
After 30 or 45 days, it was longer than the 30. They came and picked him up one day.
And what would he have gone back to fight?
I don't know. I never could find out.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
Now, something like that haunts you, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he was a nice young man. But I would say whether he went back, if he went back at the front, I'm sure he was killed.
Yeah.
And but if he went home, he's going to have an untold amount of counseling and sympathy.
Mm-hmm.
But he's nice and clean. He kept himself shaved. His clothes were clean all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd have him drive my Jeep once in a while, you know, just give him something to do, try to get him to talk. Never a word.
Mm-hmm. And he probably just had seen or experienced too much. And
yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that wound, it didn't feel like it hit his collarbone, but it must have just went right over and then back in here. It had a huge, big old scar, but they filled that in,
mm-hmm,
and it was healing,
mm-hmm,
you know, while he was there. But I don't know, thousands of times, I'm sure, over the years, that I've wondered what happened to him.
Well, no wonder you had dreams with experiences,
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, it's, mm-hmm, things like that
mm-hmm
really,
yeah,
work on you, because
Well, were you, was that part of your job?
No.
Okay.
No, my job was to see that the vehicle was running.
Right. But you must have been known for...
I guess. They just assigned that, well, I was, position I had, I could take somebody like that, because I didn't have to physically go out and, well, I did some, but work on the trucks and whatever, but I had to see that it was done.
Right.
And I could keep him with me and take him to different places, moving around all the time. And
but the other incident you told about when someone came to you and said, you know, this was happening, why would they have come to you?
Well, that night I was sergeant of the guard.
I see. So you were, you had the authority.
Yes, yes.
Okay. All right.
And that with the little girl.
Right.
And then with the boy, I went down in the tent. Well, the guard knew who he was and come to my tent and got me out.
Okay. Yeah. So the family that, it was a Korean family who did the laundry, and they lived right, right around with you.
They kept a tent for them all the time, furnished them supplies. And we was always by a river or stream of some kind, and they washed clothes in the rivers.
Okay.
That's the way they washed them.
All right. And is that where you got your drinking water and things like that?
Well, we would get the water, but we had a purification plant that we set up. And but at first, why, we just had to put quinine in the water, which is pretty nasty. And but after, once we got up there and got equipment and stuff, why, we set up our own purification plant, which was, and then other outfits would come and get their drinking water from us too.
Okay. So how often would you move?
Oh, it varied. Gosh, sometimes we might not be stopped a week someplace. Then maybe the next time a month or so. Just kind of depended on how the war was progressing.
Okay.
Which way it was going, whether we wanted.
Did you ever have to go back?
Yeah, a couple of times we had to go back. Yeah. And because it's getting, well, when you start hearing the artillery and seeing it and stuff, you know it's time to move. And, and then you gather up what you can and get out. But we were relatively safe all the time, except for the guerrillas. You had to be on watch all the time. And mostly, it's kind of like it is here now, is they set explosive devices in the roads. There's a kid that lives here, same age as my younger brother. He was killed by, he was driving a Jeep down the road. And he was killed. I was on my way home when he was killed by that. And you had, there really was no defense for it other than just hope you didn't hit a mine that was planted in the road, you know.
You know, we hear so much about the Vietnam War and the guerrilla warfare there, but actually we don't hear a lot about the Korean War and how it was fought.
No, you don't hear very much about the Korean War. It was probably one of the most, for the soldier, either side, the climate, so cold and nasty weather most of, and then of course in the summertime it gets so hot, down to below the 38th parallel. It's the way it's situated, there's ocean currents or something, and it get just as hot in the summertime as it got cold in the winter, and it was a miserable place to live and try to work and hopefully help somebody.
Yeah. Was there any good thing about the experience?
Oh, yeah. In a sense, it was all good. You know, once you got through it, and it just, I don't know, it gives you more of an appreciation for human life, I think. And because no matter which side you're on, they were dedicated, and so you can't necessarily blame the individual soldier that out there, because he's following his orders, same as I followed my orders, and so it just, I don't know, it was an adventure I wouldn't want to go through again, but it's priceless.
Okay, I have another question along that line, but I want to backtrack a little bit. Because you were in the, I'm going to call it the mechanics, you didn't use that term.
Yes.
Okay, did you have experience? Is that why you were in that?
Yes, more or less, growing up out here on the farm.
Okay.
And then got in the Army, and they, of course, give you tests.
Mm-hmm.
And then in Virginia, that's what I went to, maintenance school down there.
All right. And so they trained you?
Yeah.
Okay, and what was that?
Oh,
just basic?
Basic mechanic work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what were the vehicles that you were responsible for?
Oh, I had, of course, your Jeeps and your three-quarter tons, your six-bys, they called them.
And these were trucks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I was responsible for all the generators because they all run on gasoline. And had all big trucks that hauled dirt and sand and what have you, semis that hauled poles, railroads, ties, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And if it ran on gasoline and had wheels, why?
Mm-hmm.
I pretty well had to see the maintenance on it.
Now, these vehicles would have been brought over from
from
America.
We brought all of our stuff, not on our ship, but right. It came at the same time.
Okay.
As we did.
And about how many vehicles would you have been?
There was over 400 vehicles that I was in charge of.
Okay.
And plus the generators and welders and things like that.
Mm-hmm. And so you had a regular supply of parts and things that you needed?
Well, you hope. You learn to be a good thief.
Mm-hmm. Oh, who would you steal from?
If somebody saw or told you that there was a vehicle blown up out there somewhere, you'd send a couple of men out to either get parts or the whole thing.
Okay.
We got a lot of our parts that way.
Mm-hmm.
They just couldn't get enough through our military supplies.
Mm-hmm.
That you had to go out and confiscate your
Well, that makes sense, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it was you'd get pretty discouraged
mm-hmm.
when you needed stuff like that. And I even, not too long before I came home, was pretty close to the 38th parallel. And an MP told me about it. 6x up there, it had been blown up. It had been laying there for a long time. And I asked him, well, where's that? And he said, well, it's about 6 miles up in across 38th parallel. And he told me how to get there and stay off the main road, which made it relatively safe. So I got in the Jeep, went up there, and gosh, it had everything I needed. Needed transmission, transfer case, and differentials. So I had this guy, I told him, I didn't tell him, he's north of the border. And I sent him up there and didn't know if I'd ever see him again, but he come back with everything that I told him to get. And, but you had all kinds of problems with, I know one time we was by a river and the guys, it was muddy season and they'd run their equipment down in the river and wash them, you know. Well, it wasn't long till all the wheel bearings and universal joints was going out. So I told them, no more washing your vehicles down there, because I couldn't get wheel bearings and stuff. And had this major that, I don't know really what his job was, but he wanted those vehicles clean. And I said, well, I did too, but I said, we're not going to wash them in the river anymore. And it went on for 3 or 4 days, and finally he come and told me, he said, you're going to be a private tomorrow. Well, I probably will be. But, well, it's later that day. A runner come down to the colonel's office, told me the colonel wanted to see me, and I said, God, this is fast. Get up there, the colonel says, don't worry about it, son. You did the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I was very lucky there.
Mm-hmm.
that the colonel backed me up, but he knew the situation. And
what seemed reasonable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, you know, things like that was pretty disheartening at times. And I never could understand that major. He graduated from West Point. He was an intelligent man, a nice man, really, but for some reason, he got in his head, he wanted those vehicles cleaned. Mm-hmm. And to run them down there in 3 foot of water and wash them off was the way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And
were the vehicles used by him and his men?